do it.
It's funny because last episode he's like, "So yeah, I really tried not to talk over people." I'm like, "Yeah, except for me,
I did no you last all. Week. I did not talk last, over when he, when last month. About, I didn't talk about it. Or talk over anyone.
I'm people.
You're not people. You're not people.
It was Tom too. And Tim Seeley. I was talking over you. Don't count.
Right. You're listening to Around Comics for February of 2012. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, and I am Christopher Niesman.
I am Brian Salazar.com.
I'm Tom Caters. .net. .geocities.com.
Do you still have a Geocities?
Yep, I got the only one.
The only one.
Tom Caters.
This episode is brought to you by BrianSalazar.com because I'm paying for this fucking show and go there and buy something.
I believe that the cost has been spread out over time.
Not anymore. It's where the no, they're not any longer.
We're done. Yeah. We're done.
It's coming out of my pocket.
All you gotta do is shoot me an email. I'll PayPal you.
No, I want people to listen to buy my stuff so that I can then pay for it.
Yeah.
So is it Brian with an O?
Brion. That's my name.
Mm-hmm.
Salazar.com.
How many?
You owe Tom and I each 25. What the hell is going on out in the hallway?
Margarita blender.
Huh?
Margarita blender.
They're banking drinks out there.
How many webcams do you have going at any point?
Usually, well, in the afternoon, it's only two.
Check out my webcams.
Well, this is the February 2012 episode of Around Comics.
Yeah,
so what do you have to talk about? Before we get
too far into this, I've noticed we've had some volume issues. People have complained that the episodes are not loud enough. The last one they said it wasn't good. Turn it up more.
Okay.
Turn it up, baby. Pump up the volume.
Okay, there. Okay.
Probably my fifth favorite Christian Slater film.
Our podcast is meant to be listened, like, in your den. No sound.
Headphones.
Very, like, a really nice set of headphones to pick up all the sound.
Well, and actually,
it's like a Steely Dan album.
What we have found is that if you watch The Wizard of Oz the third time that the lion roars, you can start episode 3 of Around Comics.
Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought it syncs up.
No,
syncs
we
up
make perfectly. Our episodes are specifically for submersion chambers. Sensory deprivation.
Get confused about where you are.
Well, it is February here in the Windy City, and winter still has yet to arrive.
My birthday month.
In case
you want to buy me something.
Happy preemptive birthday, Mr. Salazar.
Preemptive? That's like you're going to
first strike.
I'm not going to get a bad birthday, I think.
We're taking care of this shit early this year.
That was like a shock and awe happy birthday.
Yeah, what the hell?
Well, it's been it's kind of funny because a little behind the scenes, the week before we record an episode, we'll kind of start compiling a few things, a few talking points, things that we may want to bring up. And
you guys do that? Me and Chris do.
We don't have anything to do at work, so we got to fill our time with something.
We kind of mentally prepare, so you know.
And we just go, well, Tom will just show up.
Tom will show up. I'm sure that's something.
He'll
to
say
talk
something
about.
Funny. People will be happy, and that's all. That's all they'll remember.
I have time to read like one book between recordings. So you better hope it's good. Or
we're shit out of luck.
But January was starting to be a kind of slow comics news month. It was, after the holidays, no big goings on.
Lazy fat cat comic book producers.
And then all of a sudden on Monday or Tuesday of this week,
boom, news. announcement.
Long rumored announcement of
we're just jumping into it, huh?
Let's get it going. The long rumored announcement of
Watchmen Zero,
DC's continuation of the Watchmen, which is not actually a continuation; it's a series of prequels, which I think is really cool. Now, I don't know if we're going to have a lot of discourse on the show.
I'm pissed off about it.
Are you? Okay, good. You're going to be devil's advocate.
I could, but no.
We've talked about it, so I kind of know your views, and we'll go over that in the show. But Tom, I want to know, what was your initial reaction whenever you heard
it?
About
like, it was like a really massive moment of, just like, I don't know. I can't generate like a lot of anger about it being creep, because it's sort of surprising they haven't done it already. But a large part of me is
what,
like,
took them so long?
Right? It is something I do not care about. Like, I like the creators, kind of, but then I'm sort of like, I don't really care what the Minutemen did before they, like, before that's not Watchmen. The interest, like, that's not the interesting
so
part of their story.
You have no interest.
I don't care about what the comedian did before. You know, like, I know enough about it, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, when people say, oh, the sequel, the reason it's a cliche to say that sequels are never better than the original is like, because 95% of the time,
that's true.
It's true. Yeah. They just, you can't recreate it.
It's within, you know, probably 3 minutes of conversation or two paragraphs of a written article before someone brings up Godfather 2.
Yeah. That's the one exception to it, but it's like, what will end up happening is the first issues will sell a ton, and then every issue after that will progressively sell less. And most of the reviews will be people saying it's not as good as Watchmen, because it would be really hard to make a, you know, like, that's just, and it's just one of those things where I look at it and I'm kind of like, you know, like, it's.
I think they will be the best sellers for DC this year. I think, and not because of, I think it's, am I not turned on? Am I not? What's going on? Jesus. Hello? Can you not hear me?
There you go.
Is that better? Do I have to fucking swallow the mic?
There you are.
Lean in, buddy.
I think that they're really, and one of the reasons they're doing it is they're trying to capitalize on all the people that bought the Watchmen graphic novel when the movie came out. Yeah. And you had that thing sold millions and millions of copies, the people that don't read comic books. I know at least a half a dozen people in my life that read that book and have probably never read a comic book before and maybe not after.
If you walk into someone's house that who isn't a regular comic book fan, but they have a comic in their house, chances are it's either going to be Watchmen or Mouse.
Yeah. Are we getting before Mouse?
Did Mouse sell that much?
Mouse is one that a lot of people read in college because
read it.
It's good.
Yeah.
I got about a third through it and I just, I don't want to read about dying mice and cataclysmic.
It's about the Holocaust.
What is this? Damn. No wonder they're all dying.
I didn't understand. Oh, get it. They're out of this story.
I thought it was just like,
it's an allegory.
A bunch of rat poison laying around.
No, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's what the comics industry sort of does, you know, like, I made a joke that diminishing returns are still returns, you know, which seems to be sort of, you know, the idea of like mining something for every single drop you can get out of it, which is what
the comic industry is, an industry built on diminishing returns.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they do. I mean, and that's kind of the, you know, when I see people get super angry about it or whatever, I'm just like, it's the thing that they do. They do it with everything. Like, that's what's just going to happen. You know, the thing is people want, they see before Watchmen and they get excited because they're like, oh, I'll be like, part of them thinks I'll feel this, the first time I read Watchmen, which is impossible.
Yeah.
Like, that cannot happen. But the only thing you can control when you have something that's as good as Watchmen is that, well, you have these characters that made these people feel this way. We cannot possibly guarantee that we can make you feel this way, but we can guarantee you that we can use these characters in
we'll
story,
these characters. Which is
we'll give it a shot.
Which is like sort of what the superhero comics is all about. You know, like, people, when they say, I want more Batman, I want more Spider-Man, they really mean,
like, I met when I read it the
first time. But you can't get that.
It's rare. Watchmen hit that sort of groove because it hit adults at a time where they were looking for that, and it didn't give them how they felt the first time they read a comic book or how they read, you know, a Batman comic book. But it gave them something new to feel, a new feeling about comics at that stage.
And so, that's very hard to create.
Yes.
Like, that's not controllable, but you can control putting the characters in a bunch of books to still appeal to people who feel that strength.
The point is, how do we take our best chance at it? How do we take our best shot at it? I mean, it's like anything else. Like, okay, I'm gonna use any tool at my disposal to that's what the audience wants, right? And like I said, it's really hard to create. So how do we take the best, you know, tools that we have available and take a chance at it? How do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think the problem is I think with Watchmen has a very specific set of problems with it because of the way the original story is told. Like, I just, when you have, like, Spider-Man or Batman or something, you can imagine, like, that the best story involving Spider-Man could still happen.
Right. You know, it may not have happened yet.
With the way Watchmen's set up, it's kind of like...
It's not going to be as good as Watchmen. Because that is the ultimate end of how
all these characters... You know, like, it's very hard to think. That's why prequels are really hard, because it's really hard to...
I agree, but that doesn't mean they can't be good stories.
They'll just be good.
Do you honestly think that any one of those creators, from Azzarello to Straczynski... Cook, who, you know, I mean, these are all people that obviously have egos and deservedly so. And then, you know, on through all of the artists that are involved with it, do you think any of them honestly believes that they are making the next Watchmen?
No, I don't think any of them. There's no way that any of them are going into
it with that thought at all.
Alan Moore probably didn't think that when he was making Watchmen.
He wouldn't have signed that contract.
That's the point of it, it's just the problem of it, I should say. Whatever the next one, you know.
And the next Watchmen
isn't going to be before Watchmen, which is fine.
No.
You know, and we sit here and have obviously, you know, read about the history of Watchmen and the legalities of it, but I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that aren't aware of that. So do you want to break any of that down?
Alan Moore will come to you and tell you about it.
it's pretty well documented.
From my understanding of it, they came to Alan. Alan had, you know, he was writing Swamp Thing, and he was, you know, obviously they were looking for him to do more stuff, and they came to him with the idea of using the Charlton characters and bringing them back, you know, because they owned them at the time, and writing this story, this 12-issue thing, whatever, him and Dave Gibbons. They signed the contract, and basically the contract said that if the book is out of print for a year, that the rights to it will revert back to him and Dave Gibbons. They signed that contract because at the time, no comic book had ever stayed in print for longer than a year. It had never happened.
And at the time, that was a big leap.
Absolutely.
That is not a standard creator.
It was the best creator contract ever signed at that time, up until that point.
And they got, like, 2%?
2% of royalties and all that, yeah. So from my understanding that, yeah, they were two, if it had gone out of print, they would have gotten Watchmen back and, you know, none of this would have ever happened. Unfortunately,
it was the biggest seller ever.
And so they kept it in print. It has never gone out of print.
Same contract for V for Vendetta.
Alan feels like he was robbed of it, but I mean, he signed the contract. The way he feels is that they kept it in print unnecessarily. Like, it didn't, the sales of it didn't justify it being in print. They printed a million fucking copies of Watchmen, and it sold.
Yeah.
So I don't know how he comes up with the idea that they did it just to fuck him over. I mean, that's where his mind is at now, is like...
Well, I think a lot of things outside of that, too, probably influence his overall relationship makes him, not that he's right or wrong, but suspicious. But there's other things beyond
he's just Watchmen. He's really bitter about the idea that...
It's one in a very long chain of events where Alan Moore has probably not signed the best contracts or had things break his way. You know,
the biggest problem is that Alan is the best there is. In my opinion, he's the best comic book writer who's ever lived. He is better than what comics as an industry deserve. And that's the problem, is that you know, he has written these things that deserve, rightfully so, a certain esteem, a certain treatment from an artistic perspective. Unfortunately, it's not solely an artistic business. It is a business to sell comics. And he sells them very, very well. So the people that he sold them to, he took his ideas.
Keep making money off of it.
They keep making money, and they want to do that. So, you know, he at this point in his life, he looks at it, you know, from a, and obviously I have no fucking insight other than what I've read online and anything else, and just my sort of imagination of what Alan Moore is thinking from time to time. But I just feel like he has built it up so much of just anger and bitterness that he looks at it from a skewed perspective, because there's no other way for him to justify it in his head. He's the biggest selling comic book writer of all time, and he feels like he's been treated unfairly, which he probably has, but he's been treated more fairly than anyone else. You know what I mean? Like, he's gotten more
overall,
out of it.
Overall, comics have treated their creators like shit.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah,
horribly. Yeah. And he's been treated better than a lot of people have been, but still, like, not the level at which people who are authors or, like,
right,
people like that who are treated in a different way. Like, comics has, like, this ceiling that you get to. Like, this is as good as you're going to get treated in comics.
Yeah, it's hard, but here's the thing I did want to point out. I was reading an article. It was just sort of a commentary piece on this, and somebody who obviously was an Alan Moore fan and felt like it was a travesty and all this stuff, and was talking about how, you know, for eight, it's just another continuation of comic book creators being fucked over for 80 years. And he brought up in the very first paragraph of the article, and I wish I had it in front of me, but I don't. He brought up Siegel and Schuster and selling Superman to DC Comics.
It's national publication.
And, you know, they sold it for, you know, whatever it was, $50 or whatever. And they had no idea at the time they sold it because, you know, and he brought up the point of, they sold it for a couple of reasons. One, they needed the money. Two, they never had a doubt that they would come up with other characters. And three, they didn't ever think Superman was going to become the icon in American history that he did.
There was nothing else like it before that.
But here's the thing. If they had not sold it to DC Comics, would Superman ever have become the icon in American history that it did? I mean, I know everyone wants to point at publishers and these companies as the evil, you know, empires, and I'm not trying to justify their actions necessarily for creator. You know, they've mistreated creators for years and years and years, and there's tons of examples of it. But just because a creator has an idea or a concept or
what is the creation work if no one ever sees it?
At the end of the day, it's about money. These guys want to sell it. They want people to see it. They, you know, and that's why they go and do and sign these contracts and do it, because they want to make a living writing stories and drawing stories and telling stories. That's what creators do. Even, you know, to this day, the goal is, I want to make a living doing this. I want to sell it. I want to make it, you know, I want to put it in as many people's hands. I have something to say. I want people to see it.
You know, I think before that, the desire is not to make money off of it or make a career out of it. I think that so many of these people just, I understand. Tom and I were talking about this beforehand. You know, I'm a graphic designer, and Tom's doing some advertising stuff. He's going to school for that. And I said the first time that I ever had an ad that was in print, it was incredibly exciting. I mean, it was like, I did that. That is in print. And now at this point in my career, I do ads in 40 minutes just to get them off my desk because it's a nuisance. And, you know, from the comic book perspective, and we know so many creators out there that are dying just to see what they do in print. And I think that's the before money, it's about recognition.
I think also there's an element to it of, in like a case like Siegel or Schuster, or any creator that's been screwed over, you have in comics, the history of comics, a real polar opposite. It's not just necessarily that they sold their creation and that DC or whoever it is, like, made money off of it. Like, there are times where, like, you have the artists who are your sort of like stereotypical, like, oh, we didn't know, sort of like head in the clouds, right, like mistake. Right. And then at the opposite end, you have sort of, you do have like the cartoonishly, like, we're going to fuck you over as much as we can, like try and squeeze you.
Sure.
And that, like, that's the history of comics, or like these two incredibly.
It's not just comics, though. I mean, for.
But in the thing that we're talking about here, that's like the history of it is these two extremely polar opposite things creating creative stuff that most people outside of it wish that there was like a middle. Like there's some way that it doesn't have to be all like the Schusters don't have to like destroy DC Comics to be like rich, and DC doesn't have to like wipe out the Schusters from existence.
Where's the nice, like, everyone wants to find the nice zone.
And honestly, the Schusters is you know way more extreme of a circumstance than Alan Moore. Alan Moore is more of a morality. You know, it's him.
It's like his.
He's made plenty of money and could have made shit tons more. Yeah. It's not about money for him. It's this ideal. This, you know, he feels that his work deserves a certain.
He's almost Ditko-esque.
That's what makes him so. That's what makes him even like the thing about Alan Moore. It's like he's not kidding. He just won't take the money. Like
he doesn't want it.
Like,
he has principle. He has a principle about it. But the thing is like, okay, if Watchmen had come out and nobody gave a shit about it and it went out of print and he got the rights back, he wouldn't have the same feel. He would have been trying to fucking sell Watchmen to the next publisher, or probably writing another a sequel to Watchmen. You know what I mean? Like, if it didn't have the success that it had, nobody would have the feeling of it. You know what I mean? Like, there's that abstract sort of concept of like, it's only worth what people think it's worth. And Alan has a very high opinion.
In a lot of other systems, in a lot of other entertainment systems, though no entertainment system is perfect in getting it done. Comics, I think, is sort of notoriously bad for having a setup that when something unusual happens, someone gets like really fucked. Yeah, like because like we were saying, that's just how the relationship is.
Right,
like
right.
In a lot of other creative things or others, none of which are perfect. Like there is and a slightly better way of handling like the system. It's like the whole comic system is like anytime anything like hits a huge amount of success, like the
It distorts the perception of everything because there's money involved, and then things change dramatically.
Just one time in comics can we have something set up that isn't fucked up. Like,
one thing on Alan Moore that I kind of come back to.
He's a handsome man.
He's got
a great beard.
The perception of Alan Moore, and I kind of started to come to this realization because whenever you throw yourself out in limited bits to the public, that becomes your public
persona.
It becomes the persona, the public image. It's like, you know, I am not, you know, who I am on this show. I'm not who I am on 11 o'clock all the time.
What?
I know, it's amazing. That
this is that, actually what I'm like.
Exactly the time.
It's exactly the same.
Well, I mean, I've never seen Tom act any differently.
But no, I mean, it's a part of you, and you're different in different facets of your life. And
like
Alan,
a diamond.
You're just a big phony is what you're trying
to say. I'm not a big phony. what I'm saying is that...
No, when people only see a part of you,
that's their perception of you.
That's who you are. Yeah.
And when people talk to Alan Moore, interview Alan Moore, paraphrasing the question is, Alan, there's something that you're really, really angry about. Would you like to talk about it?
Sure.
And so people think of him as being this very curmudgeon-y, very bitter man. And certainly he's put a lot of that stuff out on his own. You know, but I've talked to Chris Staros, who is one of the owners of Top Shelf Comics, where Alan Moore puts, you know, most of his Avatar and Top Shelf, who he publishes comics work through. And Chris Starro says that, tells me that, you know, Alan Moore is one of the, you know, friendliest, most gracious, kindest people that he's met.
Chris Starro doesn't spend most of his time asking Alan Moore, like, what do you think about
DC Comics?
and so, you know, hearing that, it's like, okay, I don't think that Alan Moore is misrepresented by the questions that people ask him, but the questions that they ask him certainly solicit a certain response from him.
Most of what we hear from him is through, like, the comics media, which is skewed.
I know that there are parts of this that make him very angry and very bitter. I would guess that is not Alan Moore the man. You know, that is not the complete picture of him.
I'm really sure he's not sitting at home right now, like,
angry,
looking at Newsarama. Like,
no, but it's never going to be something that is not. There's a bitterness for it. I mean, and you can't blame him necessarily for it.
If people only asked me about the 1985 World Series, I would sound like the most bitter motherfucking person in the world. Yes, he was out. And, you know,
we didn't even ask you. That's right on the surface.
You didn't even play in the game. Imagine how Alan Moore feels.
It's not that I think about it every goddamn day.
Certainly, there's no question that the comic book industry has made a business of exploiting creative people. That's what they do. That's what anyone who is making money in a creative field who is not creative, that's how they're making money, is they're exploiting the talents of other people. Now,
here's a great idea. Let's sell it.
Well, yeah, sure. How do we sell that? How do we sell it the best way?
They're charging more for what you make than what they're paying you.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Because they want to make money on it, too. Yeah. But at the same time, there's efforts involved in promotion and whatever else.
They're doing something for it.
It ends up being imbalanced is the problem because, like I said before, you know, creators, especially when they're young, you know, they're trying to get their stuff out there. They want to be seen. They want to make a name. They want, you know,
Jack Kirby was able to get his creations out there because Martin Goodwin made a lot of fucking money selling pulp books.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And who know, you know, I mean, I don't know. There's no right or wrong. There's no absolute answer to it. It's a big goddamn mess.
It's not a comic book. It's complicated.
It is. It's extremely complicated. And it's not good versus evil. Yeah. It's not, you know, Superman versus Lex Luthor. It's not simple.
That's what happens.
But you know what? It ain't my fucking fight. You know what I mean?
What I was thinking today? It was funny. I was getting so pissed off. I said very little time on like Twitter because I'm very busy now. But I went on Twitter for like a couple minutes and I saw like some creators like arguing about like paper versus digital. And the only thing I can think was, no offense, I do not fucking care what you prefer that I buy your stuff on.
Yeah.
I have so much shit to do during the day. In like the half hour when I'm going to sit down and read something, I'm just going to fucking buy it whatever way I want. I'm not going to ask you what your
preference doesn't come into my fucking equation. When I'm giving you my money,
I follow too many creators. I'm dropping. I just can't
find you. What I've decided is that the only way to make creators happy in how we buy it is to buy it in single issues, trade, digital, and the eventual collective. Well, ultimate collected edition. You have to buy it four times to make it.
Speaking of
happy.
Systems in which the like, comics has an entirely really fucked up way of handling things, it's like how close, because the audience is so small, how close the audience is to the people that make it. You know, like there's something nice about being able to go online and like talk to the creators, but sometimes. I don't care. I'm sure it's the exact same way where they don't really give a shit.
They don't want to hear what we have to say about their work.
And that's the way, like, it maybe should be. It's maybe, like...
You don't give a shit what I think. I don't give a shit what you think.
I either buy your comic because I like it, I buy it next month because I liked it, or I stop because I didn't like it. And that is the end of the relationship.
Yeah.
Like, that is all it is.
Well, I'm definitely... I mean, it's like... And that's even to the point of, like... you know, we've made friends that are comic book creators in this industry over the years, and I still am like, hey, you know what? I got to feed my fucking kids, and I got to go to work, and I got more shit to do.
Yeah.
Hey, good luck to you, buddy. You know, I'll go fight the good fight. It ain't my fucking fight. I don't, you know, I'm not here to fucking make your living for you. I'm not here.
Yeah.
I love what you do. That's great. I'll support you in giving you my fucking money. I'm not here to be your defender. I'm just a consumer.
It's like the relationship.
You defend yourself.
The relationship is too close. We need to move into separate apartments.
Yeah, I'm not boycotting
other people. Yeah, like
the thing is, I'm dating 237 people on Twitter.
Yeah,
there's like all these good, like I love what you do. I buy you're awesome. Sometimes.
It's cool. You know?
We need separate spaces of which, like, I need to not hear from you, and you need not to hear from me. All right, that's just how it's got to be.
We just
need to make a clean break. You just. Here's what you'll do. You'll sell your books to a comic book shop. I'll come in and just grab them. We never have to see each other.
You give me a call. Tell me when you're not going to be there, and I'll come and get my stuff.
I'll come get my stuff
from the comic shop.
I'll give you my money, and that's
to say how ridiculous this got. And I'm just like, okay, I have to stop doing this. I was reading some comic books a couple weeks ago, and you know, I my laptop open. And I was like, oh, I'm going to tweet that I enjoyed this comic. And it was just like, you know, hey, I read, you know, American Vampire, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
And I catch myself going, oh, what's Scott Snyder's Twitter handle? Because I want to, you know, write, I read American Vampire.
By Scott Snyder.
Scott Snyder. And, you know, at Scott Snyder. Very good. And I'm like, you know what?
Because you want him to know that you think it's
cool. No, and I was just like, you know, fuck that.
You got the money.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I read American Vampire. I thought it was very good. End of message.
You know, well, for us doing the show, I mean, we've spent years now promoting comic books, promoting mm-hmm. creators, promoting specific books, and you know, trying our best to help
out. Which has been fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have no complaints about it whatsoever in that regard. I'm just saying, you know, it's like I see people that want, and not just creators, but fans that want, like, people to take a stand about, you know, and it's like, well, wait a minute. I know Brian Azzarello. I like his work. And you're telling me I shouldn't buy it because Alan Moore doesn't think that he should write a comic book based on a character that he wrote 25 years ago.
As much as I like Alan Moore, I can't care that much about what Alan Moore has. You know, the dude also thinks magic is real.
Yeah, right. He worships some sort of weird dragon serpent god.
Which is cool. Like, I mean, it's great for Alan Moore because that is like the perfect continuation of where he's going.
You better be careful there, Tom.
I know, right? Yeah. His work is magic on me. But yeah, it is a funny thing where people are like, you know what? Alan Moore...
Listen,
no, probably doesn't give a shit about what I think either, which he shouldn't. You know, like,
I hope he doesn't.
Yeah, right? You know, like,
that would make me feel.
I didn't really like Neonomicon that much. I'd be like, he doesn't, you know, like, what does that mark?
Have you read Neonomicon?
I have.
Yeah?
I'm sorry.
You want to talk about it for a second?
No, you already talked about it for an hour and a half, and I've already listened to
your fucking sloppy seconds.
Yeah. Oh, go. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Fuck off.
Fuck off. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I want to talk about enough.
Hashtag, yeah, not interest.
Yeah, are we done with Watchmen?
I'm looking forward to it.
Listen, you have two of my favorite creators in comics, Azzarello and Cook, doing stuff with characters that I enjoyed 25 years ago.
I'm looking forward to Straczynski miniseries. I think that's a good format for him.
And
which one is he doing?
He's doing Silk the Doc Manhattan.
Oh, no,
I don't know. I feel like there's a joke there about, like, it never finishing or, like...
Of course there is. There's always a joke about it.
He's doing the Ozymandias and Dr. Manhattan, I believe.
Is he doing both of those?
Yeah.
Who's doing the Minutemen one?
Cook is writing and drawing. And he's writing Silk Spectre and
Amanda Connor's drawing.
To me, the Minutemen one's I think will be the toughest one.
That's the one I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, because at its best, what is it going to be? Like...
It'll be New Frontier with different characters. You know what I mean?
Like, that's the thing.
It's right in his wheelhouse, though. Yeah. I mean, if you're, you know what I mean? Like, it's
kind of weird, though.
I mean, toughest from the fact of, like,
I think it'll be the toughest to do something that's really... I mean, it's obviously going to look really awesome, and it'll be well-written, but if you're looking for some sort of, like, ooh, this is, like, some new insight into The Watchmen, that one might be the toughest one, just because
there's so much stuff
in Watchmen already about, like, what they do.
I'm sort of interested in the idea. I mean,
I'd like to see what he does.
Yeah, I'm interested in the idea of, like, what else could these characters do? What else could you do with these characters? I mean, in Watchmen, you had, you know, such a rich history built into that book. And some people will say that was all that needed to be told. Well, okay, maybe that's the case. If there was never another Watchmen story told, I'm not going to, you know, cry about it. But
I want to know more.
But at the same time, I remember, you know, I can remember sitting there going, and part of the reason I loved the book so much is because there's like, wow, what, you know, I was thinking about, what were those Minutemen doing? You know, what was Rorschach and Night Owl? What were, you know, Night Owl? Is it Night Owl?
Yeah, right.
There's
so many
owl characters. I get confused.
Well, it's just the first.
What were they doing when they were partners before all this happened? How you know? And what were the Minutemen doing before this all happened? And so I certainly thought about it. Now people say, well, it's just a shitty idea to try and do that. But
I don't think it's a shitty idea. I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough because even if you're good,
it's not going to be Watchmen. I mean, if you go into it thinking, well, this is going to make Watchmen better.
I'm not doing that, Sal.
No, listen, I know, but
we're talking about the comics community. All right.
Like, but I think the people that are going to buy it aren't going to think that. I mean, I think but those people are going to hate it no matter what. Well, they're not going to like it. You know what I mean? Like the people that are going into going, well, this better be as good as Watchmen. They're going to hate it.
It's the tough situation because when you have like a sequel, like you have the problem that you're using the draw that this is part of Watchmen. You know, like you're using that as part of the draw to it, but you also have to balance out like this isn't like Watchmen again. You know, like you're. So
yeah,
it's
but
like
I mean, how many Batman stories are told, and it's like. Okay, they're not Dark Knight. You know, they're not the best Batman stories.
They would have been telling 9,000 Watchmen stories between now and then.
Maybe they should have. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe they would have been better. I don't
know. I think Minutemen is the most interesting out of all of the prequels because it's got two things working either for or against
it. Lots of rape. Well, right? Lots of rape.
Comics loves rape.
Comic fans love rape. Costume rape.
It's Darwin Cook's return to superhero comics after a pretty long hiatus doing the Parker stuff. So
doing the spirit that you loved.
So
and well, no one else did.
I like
I'm just kidding. I'm just
but no, I think there's going to be, you know, hopefully a group of fans that are looking at this as, you know, it's like, how is this not just going to measure up to Watchmen, but how's this going to measure up to New Frontier? How's it going to measure up to his Silver Age, Golden Age?
It'll be interesting to see, like,
superhero stuff.
How much, you know, how much it does, what its real relation to Watchmen is, you know, as like, is how much of it is. Like a true.
Are they trying to link it? Are they trying?
Yeah, like, or is it just
some stories?
Yeah, or some stories between it. You know, like that. I'm sort of interested to see exactly how that's treated. You know,
piqued your interest. I'm going to throw a monkey in the wrench. I want to know what
monkey in the wrench.
Yeah, I want to know what people think. Specifically, what like the people that are very much against it think about? Okay, well, it's coming out, so you're not stopping that.
It's going to come out.
Yeah. It's going to come out. Like, no matter how much you hate it, I see many online
petitions.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But what do you feel about like people that are going to torrent it? You know, it's like don't give your money to DC because they're destroying Alan Moore's creation. So is it okay to torrent it then? Because I'm not giving them my money, but I'm still going to read it.
It's interesting.
What do you feel?
Alan Moore thinks that torrents are magic.
I think that's an after the fact way of maybe justifying stealing it.
Because I want to read it, but I don't want to pay evil DC.
Let's stop talking about Watchmen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about something I'm excited about? And that I have to say, this is sort of a dream come true. I remember, I don't know
before
what episode.
Before Dark Knight.
No. This was yes. Before
all Batman stories are before.
Yeah. Jeff Johns. It was announced that Johns is going to revisit Shazam, Captain Marvel, who is going to be renamed. And I remember specifically saying, begging DC Comics to put Jeff Johns on a revamp, a retelling of Shazam. And so thank you, Jeff Johns and DC Comics.
And they're going to call him Shazam.
And they're going to call him Shazam. They're getting rid of the whole Captain Marvel.
I mean, that's going back to the cartoon. He was called Shazam.
Yeah, he was called Shazam the cartoon, and everybody knows him as Shazam, but the character's name is Captain Marvel.
It'd be cool.
Legal aspects with Marvel Comics.
I'm interested. I think it'll be a good thing for Jeff Johns to write a lighter, like, child-oriented character as opposed to...
Do you think he'll tell, like, he'll spend, like, two issues telling us how much Shazam doesn't suck?
No, I think...
I am the big cheese.
I don't know. I think it might be because I haven't liked as much of his recent stuff.
It seems that he's fallen off a bit with. He's busy. He's a busy guy. And it seems like his work is suffering.
It's like
a tone.
It's a little too monotonously, like homogeneously toned. But that happens to every creator who starts writing like four books.
Right.
Like, all these books feel the same. Well, it's because one person
is writing
them. You know? But it's like the thing when you're reading them. So maybe it'll be good to write like something that's
sitting around tables at Marvel for
a different
years.
Tone.
Yeah.
Something that's lighter. You know, like not so much. Arms getting ripped off, hopefully, or like
he really did become a fan of dismemberment.
Yeah, I mean, we could get into a whole thing about superhero comics and dismemberment and like the most boring tropes. Not like only in like the last
women in refrigerators.
This guy's a badass. How do you know? Because he killed a character you haven't seen in 4 years. Or like, this guy means business because he ripped someone's arm off. You know, like, oh, come on, seriously? Like, can we get past this?
Hey, listen, the cliches work, Tom. It's just a fact.
I know. Spread them out a little bit, though. I mean, like, come on.
Don't pile them up on each
other. Don't pile them up. Dismemberment on dismemberment. You know, like, leave some space. There's all kinds of cliches in comics we can use. Don't just, you know, find your three favorite and stick with them. Use the whole wide range.
It wouldn't be comics then.
Yeah, I know.
So what do you got sitting in front of you there?
Oh, Bean World.
iPad. Oh, you're talking to Tom.
Bean World. Oh, yeah. I read my stuff in paper like some of the creators prefer.
Oh, well, good for you.
I always ask.
Who is the writer that... he's a novelist that put out that big...
Oh, Jonathan Franzen. About, like...
Doesn't understand what digital comics are.
Some creative people just don't want to know anything else about them than what they write.
My favorite
anything
line...
Anything that is not paper is fake, Tom.
My favorite line out of that, and I'm gonna credit Timmy Wood for mentioning this on Twitter, and I was thinking the same thing, was in the article... He said that, you know, if I spill orange juice on my iPad, then I can't read my book. I'm just like, have you ever spilled orange juice on a paperback? It makes it absolutely...
I would burn it at that point, yeah.
It's just
old men like going, I don't understand. His mentality is
it's
old.
It's asking a blacksmith to review cars.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You know, like, what do you think? Oh, it's not as...
There's no horses.
You feed a horse. Have you ever tried to ride in a car? It's not the galloping of the horse. You know, like, you're
gasoline.
Asking
wrong
people, like, what they think of things that...
if you're going to ask someone... a question you know the answer to, you're going to get the answer you're looking for. I mean, pretty much that's how it's going to work.
An author, he is very literary. I'm guessing
he digs paper. He digs paper big time.
This dude has spent
a long time.
All right, back to Bean World.
Bean World, Volume 2.
Anger women.
Oh, shit.
We'll
oh,
get I'm to sorry. That. That's okay, fine.
We'll
get
around
no, no.
Here. Yeah, we'll circle back around to that. I got this for Christmas, Bean World Volume 2, A Gift Comes.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, and I had just enough time since the last time we recorded a month ago to read it.
Wow!
I know, yeah.
You are busy.
Yeah, I am busy. And I love Bean World, especially now that I spend a lot of my time like trying to make stuff up in my own head. I have come to really appreciate how simple yet complicated the stories are in this book. If you've never seen Bean World, it's about a bean world populated by different beans that have various jobs. And
there's a specific hierarchy.
There's a hierarchy, and there's a system the way the world works in there. As Larry Martyr, the creator of Bean World, says, it's not a place, it's a process, which is a very good description of it. Because you have the various characters in this world. Like, there's one person who sort of, there's a... you know, character who's an inventor and he invents everything. And there's the soldiers that go get food. And there's guys in charge of the soldier. And there's the tree that, like, gives them the food that they bring to the creatures that make the food edible for them. So it's like a huge hierarchy of things.
Like, you know, a like, giant Mario Brothers game.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, the world, it works. Everyone has their own specific job. There aren't bad guys and good guys. There's just how you, everyone needs everybody else to survive. You know, and sometimes that involves conflict between people, but that's just the way it is. That's all set up in the first one. What I love about the second one is he sort of puts a twist on it where there's something broken about the bean world. Like, when it was first created, it wasn't created the way it was supposed to be. And there's a flaw in it at some point and that's changed everything. But so the whole system that you've learned is like, oh, this is just like the way the world works. It's not the way it's supposed to work, but it does work. And it's just really interesting to read a book like that. But like it's very non-judgmental. Like there's no good guys and bad guys. And
there just is.
It's a lot of stuff about creativity because eventually some of the beans who spend most of their time just hunting for food and get it back, every once in a while a bean breaks out.
They're trying to sell their comic.
Yeah, they're like, yeah,
damn it! Ah!
They have a breakout where they become creative. Like one of them becomes an artist.
Inspiration.
Yeah, inspiration. All of a sudden they're no longer a soldier. They're an artist and they get to be whatever they are if they can convince the other beans that what they do is worth them not going out on the hunt to get food, which I think is a really interesting way to think about virtually every job everyone has in the world besides right. being a farmer. Like, is what you do like worth to society as yeah, like yeah.
Do you contribute?
Yeah,
you,
and like certain some of the characters can't, like the guy who's in charge of the army can't see the art. Like when the guy makes art, he just looks at it and goes, "That's just a bunch of stuff stacked on each other." Yeah, like he doesn't recognize. Like, but it's not like, "Oh, this guy is evil. This guy is stupid because he doesn't understand." It's just not the way he is. He just doesn't recognize. You know what's going on in it, and it's very simply drawn. It's all black and white with very simple. Bean drawings
beans.
And snakes. Yeah.
They're beans.
But it's great. It's so...
It sounds... I remember you,
I've
when you
talked
read
about
the first
one.
Vince,
yeah.
I've listened to Vince talk about
Vince
it.
Vince has a bean yeah. world
Vince,
tattoo.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Martyr, to me, seems like a very peaceful sort of guy that
yeah.
is promoting a certain utopian ideal.
Yeah.
But in a non-aggressive, in a passive sort of way of like just going, yeah. this is, you know, this is a society, look at it and
this
maybe
like,
we can learn something from it. Maybe
yeah.
we can, you know, grow from that. Every time I hear you guys talk about it, I haven't read yeah. either one of them.
It's good.
The volumes of Bean World. But
they're very
Chris Burnham loves that book.
They're very engrossing.
Crazy.
They're very engrossing. At first you're kind of like, ah, oh, this, what is going on in this? And then you kind of learn like the rules of how, like the world works, and you kind of see as characters like change, and you see origins of characters. It makes a lot of sense, and it's like a really good way of. It's like part utopia, but also part like how the real world is, and
right?
How like people do interact with each other, and like a really good way to think of the world is not necessarily think that people are
evil or good inherently.
Yeah,
they just exist and. How they interact with other people is how it is.
And you got to figure out a way to get things done like with things you don't agree with. And sometimes conflict is part of it. And it's a very interesting and fun read. And, you know, it would be good for kids, actually, I think.
Yeah.
Like, because it's not
overly
sounds a little too socialist for my kids.
How much capitalism? Well, I don't see any of these characters paying for anything.
I think this is a socialist world. Did Obama do the introduction?
There's a village to raise a child.
It's just one of them Obama books that is not. I love it.
Is there health care reform?
There's a huge thing in the book where they have like single payer, or is it going to be,
is the giant
tree going to have to pay for everyone's insurance, or like do you put it out to the free market? There's a lot of talk.
Do the shrubs get,
the shrubs live in a different part of the, they're segregated.
Oh.
Yeah. There's no, yeah. There's racism. There's racism, yeah. Definitely. No, there is racism.
Of course there is.
Why could there not be racism?
It's
just like it's like the real world, right?
Yeah. So the black beans and the pinto beans are not allowed to go to the same school.
Black and brown's cool, man.
It's the navy beans and the great northern beans.
That's good. Yeah, Bean World is great. I need to get back.
I got it for Christmas, and I read it, and it's fantastic.
Awesome.
And my next month, I'll be talking about, because I just started.
Bean World
3. No. I'll give you a preview. It's going to be Fantastic Four Visionaries John Byrne Volume 1.
Wow!
Enough time to finish that by the time we record.
There's some good mullets in that book.
Oh, there are some fantastic... Fantastic mullets.
It's like a hockey game in the 80s.
It was funny when
but Sue Storm's the one with the
The Fantastic Four, it looked like it's sort of a hockey team. But a lot of the Watchmen stuff where people are like, well, if you don't want, if you don't want Alan Moore's works to be done, like, why do you read the Fantastic Four? Like, why duplicate? People have been exploiting Jack Kirby's work for decades.
Why do you read that?
Yeah, and I was just like, well, like 90% of it's not good. It's not all of it's been great stuff.
I don't feel bad about it.
It's like the John Byrne stuff. And like, it's like, well, you know, they just keep chugging it out.
Always publish that book.
It's the flagship title.
Well, speaking of John Byrne, have either one of you guys read Cold War?
No.
I don't even know what Cold War
is. John Byrne
Cold
says.
War?
Cold War.
No.
It is John Byrne's espionage thriller coming out from IDW. It's really good. If you are a fan of... early 1960s era James Bond stuff, that is definitely, this is not Queen and Country. There are Bond girls.
Sweet.
It's a very James Bond, more the Ian Fleming novels as opposed to the movies. And there's some part of the feel of the movies there, but it's really more of a Cold War era.
Is Roger Moore in it?
No. But the main character is kind of Roger Moore. It's good 1950s spy stuff.
50s or 60s? You said 60s. Now it's 50s.
There's a touch of 1940s in it. I'm not going to lie.
It's spanning three decades.
It takes place in the 1950s. Bond is probably the closest comparison. Yeah. Most of that stuff was written in the 50s. So
it leads up to the 70s.
Now, here I am trying to talk about a
comic that I haven't read.
If you like Ian Fleming style espionage stuff and John Byrne.
How many issues have come out?
I think four.
The only John Byrne I'm getting right now is I follow John Byrne Says on Twitter, which is just someone repeating the crazy shit that John Byrne says on his forum on Twitter. The John Byrne forum is just like this weird world of like... John Byrne's world. And every once in a while, at least every couple days, there's something he says that's just like... dude, calm down, John Byrne.
I think in the last...
Artistically, by the way, it's some of the best stuff I've seen. From him in a while. Yeah, it's really in a while. It's still him inking himself, and he's drawn with probably a ballpoint pen or whatever. But it's pretty
cool. Endures.
Yes, he
does what he does. Right,
abides.
He abides. John abides.
I've been reading pretty much the only thing I've been reading lately, because it's consumed every moment of my comic book reading time. Sure. The Ecstatic Omnibus.
Oh, it's a big book, man. You got to get through that.
Whoo! Yeah, it's a monster. It's the biggest. It is the biggest omnibus that Marvel has ever put out. And it's everything Ecstatic related. It's pretty awesome. But it's
the X-Force.
Ecstatics is
X-Force,
awesome.
Ecstatics, the mini. Ecstatics is awesome. It's for those that may not know.
Is that the Dupe miniseries?
It does have the Dupe and Wolverine miniseries.
Like, it is has, it?
Some Darwin
to think there. That was a book that one of the big two put out for like a significant amount of time. Like that,
I know that's what I'm looking at it again, and I'm shocked that book ever got produced and ran for as long as it did and spawned miniseries. Yeah. And I mean, it's so bizarre in the sense of
it doesn't fit.
It is a book.
It's an indie book. Yeah. I mean, it really is just an indie book. The characters are nobodies. I mean, there's no names, and occasionally they have, Wolverine shows up or something like that. But for the most part, it's nobody you've ever heard of.
Yeah,
they're all and you know, it's Allred is the majority of the art. There's some other artists that fill in. Darwin Cook did some stuff, and Peter Milligan wrote the bulk of it. And it is just a bizarre sort of, for those that have never read it, it's basically, Ecstatics is a supergroup that, is put together to sort of be the reality stars of the superhero world. They're owned by a billionaire, like IPO internet, guy that, is doing it just to like sell, merchandising stuff, and they're superpowered mutants that fight crime, but basically it's only crime that they set up to get ratings.
Yeah.
And they're followed around by this little mutant creature that has a camera built into it, basically, and the fucking brilliant thing about it is that no one in that book is safe. The first issue is basically you lose the entire team. which is just unbelievable, and then from the from then on out, you don't know who is going to live or die.
Yeah.
And new characters come in and characters get killed off.
Also, it has all that suspense, but it also doesn't take itself too seriously.
No, not at all. It's interesting. Yeah, it's that's a great point. It's so interesting because on one hand it's an examination of the human psyche, and on the other hand it's like a weird, goofy,
like almost like a not a parody of superheroes, but like a little bit of poking fun.
I would say parody is certainly. I mean, it certainly is looking at it from the aspect of like, okay, these characters are reality TV stars and not really superheroes. They're just doing it for the fame and money.
The book always felt just short of being self-aware. Not quite, but it wasn't a far leap. I mean, it's Milligan very aware of what he was putting out there.
Certainly. I mean, that I don't know if I'd agree that the book was
just
self-aware. The characters were not.
Just short of it. It wouldn't have been, for me anyway, that was the impression, is that it wouldn't have been that far of a leap. It wasn't quite there, but
for whatever reason, Allred's art has that sense to it, because it's sort of,
God, he's so good.
It's a twisted look at reality.
Yeah.
Like, his work is very simple in a lot of ways, and it's like a twisted sort of almost real, but not really.
Sort of funny on its own in a weird way without being what you would
jokey.
Consider funny.
It's not jokey.
Like, it just looks like the names are a little weird. Like, the names are a little
character
jokey.
Character designs are always a little strange and odd. And but, I always, I mean, issue after issue, I just keep going, how the fuck did this keep getting published? Who was the person behind this just keep pushing this out? Because
if it had been four issues, then you would have said, okay, somebody was out of the office and this...
And got snuck this by. But I mean, it's like 80 issues all told. I mean, it's unbelievable. And
well, I have the omnibus is, what, probably 40-something issues almost?
I think it's more than that. It's huge. It's... I mean, with all the miniseries and everything else, it's
a lot. I mean, it's a
it's X-Static one or it's X-Force. It starts off as X-Force 1 through 36 or something like that, and then it's X-Static.
I just love that it was X-Force. Like when you think about that name, like and what that thing.
Well, that was one of the issues I just read not that long ago was when Cannonball and the old X-Force comes to like a press conference of X-Force and saying, you know, you're shitting on the name X-Force and we won't allow it any longer kind of thing. And it's just I guess that sort of almost self-aware. I can sort of see that, but yeah, it was they were. You know, there was no pretense to them. They knew what they were in for.
Yeah.
They wanted to be rich and famous for as long as they could before they died. And that's why they joined the group. And, you know, and none of the characters were really powerful. And they killed. That was the thing. Like, they killed with no, you know, I mean, there was no morals. It was just like, okay, we're in a fight. Bam! I mean, we're killing everyone. There was no, you know, and that's surprising at that point in time. It's just like, the whole book is just fucking bizarre and amazing that it was ever published for that long. And if you get a chance, go back and read it. It is so good. But hurry,
because it's already out of
print. Yeah, it's already out of print, but I mean, you could probably
Alan Moore
go back
did not
and
sign that deal.
Well, you could probably go back and get single issues of it, I imagine, at conventions and stuff like that. And
it's weird to think about because of all of the superhero universes, or like the X universe is like the one that like
takes
probably
itself
has
more serious than
the
any other.
Most serious, like angsty,
dour,
like everything, and like oh, we have more, like is there another group of characters that have had more people from shitty futures come back to visit them? Like everyone
is there. Is there another character in comics that is more of a downer than Cyclops?
Like,
is there any dude that you just do not want to fucking
like
hang out
X-Men
with?
X Men have had like 50 people from the future come see them, and it is 50 different shitty futures.
No one ever comes back and says, "You know what? Things are
we talked about this before, but yeah, like the X Men, like nothing good's ever gonna happen to any of you. Like, and it's so serious. It takes itself so seriously that X-Statics is like." Tangentially part of that is just really funny to me.
And it's sort of a beautiful extension of it, of like these characters just like they're aware of it and they're like, fuck it, I'm going to get as much money and booze and sex and drugs and fame as I can get for as long as I... Because I know what's... I know how this story ends.
Yeah.
You know, like that's
Bishop
kind of...
Told me I'm
going to
die.
Yeah, we're all going to die. It's, you know, it's not going to end well. So I'm going to enjoy the shit out of myself while I can. You know, and that's really, you know, I bet you if you ask Milligan, it's probably kind of where that came from. It was just
like the X-Universe. Nothing good ever happens to anyone.
No, never.
Never. Nothing. Like, I had a kid. Well, he's going to end up a fucking cyborg, or he's going to die, or
he's the Antichrist.
He's going to end up older than you.
He's going to grow up and he's going to hunt you down and kill you.
These characters just, it's like, oh God, nothing
it's
can
just
ever
so
happen
to
you. Nothing can ever happen to you.
Yeah, and X-Static is sort of, there's that there, like, you know, Mr. Sensitive, the main character who's fantastic, is sort of that, he is still that sort of dour, you know, he's the one character that's running around like going, what are you people doing? Why are you, you know, this is crazy.
He's
We're
like
supposed
the
to
one
be heroes.
Shouldn't we be forming ourselves into a proactive
team? We should be better. We should be better than this. And everyone else is just sort of like, I'm going to go get some coke and hookers and, you know.
I don't care.
Yeah.
And Dupe is one of my, like, just great character. It's just, it's one of those comic book series that when you sort of like, whenever you feel like, you know, like, big two comics are always just boring, you know, like, they're sort of boring.
Homogenous.
There's always a chance that you will get something very
awesome,
fucking weird, like ecstatics that happens. Not all the time.
Not all the time,
but it still can happen.
I would say next to Morrison's new X-Men, it is definitely the weirdest and just out there brilliant stuff.
I always liked, I think like they're good, they're like really good sort of bookends to me of like where the X universe is, like where Morrison kind of like exaggerated and sort of blew out like all this sort of things that lie within the X-Men, like really made the soap opera
right,
extreme and like had him go into space and had all this like super.
He went the other direction of like, you know, okay, it's going to be serious. It's going to be so melodramatic.
Yeah, and it's going to have all this crazy stuff. Like Scott's going to cheat on Jean and Jean's going to die and Magneto's been hiding, like just blowing like it all out, like the opposite end, and then ecstatics. Doing it at the other end
of the spectrum.
Going, yeah. Be ridiculous.
Yeah, like both sort of ridiculous in really good ways.
Yeah.
And about the same time? Did they overlap?
I want to say ecstatics was before
I New think X-Men. It was before.
New X-Men might have come at the end of
ecstatics.
Yeah, I think ecstatics.
But I'm not 100% certain.
Now, I wasn't reading many comics at the time when ecstatics came out. I can only imagine that people lost their fucking mind.
Well, just like New X-Men, a lot of X-fans prefer not to think of those as actually being
stories. Yeah, X-Books. Yeah. ecstatics.
They've kind of been wiped out of canon in many people's minds.
Well, I don't know. I don't see people talk about ecstatics
in the X-Men world. I mean, because you don't really... They're not X-Men. They're not...
Yeah, Morrison definitely fucked around with a lot more of the characters that people like hold as.
I mean, these were
all
new characters for the most part. They weren't anyone that you know had any history, and so beyond the name, name, and they even played on that of just like, well, we own the fucking name and we're going to use it. And the X-Men and the original X-Force hated it, you know. And it's just like, well, fuck you.
You're not dour enough. You're not X-Men enough.
And so. I think it's real easy for people to, but I think I remember at the time people not liking that book at all. I mean, fans of the X-Men did not like that book, and people did not get that book, and I remember enjoying it a lot, and at the time, and that's why
I haven't read any of those in a really long time. I bet they've aged like awesomely, like in a really.
Oh, it's so.
Well, I'm about 30 issues in. Yeah. I've been reading it, and it's. It's as good as I remember.
That reality TV stuff in it too. You got to remember.
It was way before any of this stuff was coming.
Yeah, way before like the real reality TV craze.
It's
aged
really well because he was in front of all that at the time, and you know probably why so many people didn't like it because it was so bizarre and out there at the time. But now looking back, it's like he was right on the money, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I personally think it aged. Extremely well. You can read it today, and it could be it. And I think that's also because of Milligan and Allred and their storytelling abilities, not abilities, but their styles. It all feels sort of
modern,
but alternate.
Yeah.
Reality anyway. Like, it's alternate universe anyway, so there is no time.
Well, he kind of has a style that you wouldn't necessarily... Like, you know how certain artists have a style that you're like, oh, you know, Liefeld's art looks like
that's the
90s. 90s.
That's
he kind of doesn't have a style like that.
It's kind of timeless. It's sort of classic, but it's also sort of so weirdly new. You know, it's... Yeah, definitely.
It's
like,
unique.
It exists outside of, like...
I would agree with that, absolutely. But definitely, if you haven't read it, if you get a chance, I mean, it's expensive. It's not cheap. But even just go and find back issues of Ecstatics or the,
you know. Do you still have the trades of them?
I don't know. I'm not sure if they do or not. But, if you can find it, it's worth the read if you've never read it. It's good stuff.
Well, it's funny because I actually just got another X-Men omnibus. I noticed that you have that internal clock. Where it's like
Chris's X-Men omnibus clock.
This omnibus has been out for X amount of time, which means it's probably getting ready to like out of print.
Classic stuff, like the Burn, which X-Men omnibus?
I never think about that stuff ever.
Well, if there's an omnibus that I'm like, yeah, you know what, I think I want to get that. And if it's out for
that's
a
few
months.
That's because you're a collector at heart.
Well, no, it's I know whenever I get them, it's a lot to read. And I'm like, okay. Okay, I'll pick. And that's expensive.
As we've talked, yeah. it's an inconvenient way.
They're not easy. So anyway,
I don't have a problem.
There are three of the classic, quote unquote, classic X-Men omnibi that have been released. The Uncanny X-Men, which is the Cochrane Claremont, and then moving into the Byrne Claremont stuff. Then there's the first X-Men, just X-Men, which was like the first 30-ish issues of X-Men. Well, the second one came out, and that's issue 36 through 66, and that it's a lot of the Roth artwork and a few other guys, but then it's that amazing 13 issues that Roy Thomas and Neil Adams did.
That's your favorite.
I love those comics. So much. It was whenever I was growing up. It was the
those are the ones with living. What is it?
Living Monolith.
The Living. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is a weird name for something. Like
he actually popped up in a Marvel team up.
Living Monolith.
Years. it was the
Living Monolith.
It was the Living Pharaoh.
What do you mean?
Then he becomes the Living Monolith.
Yeah. The Living Pharaoh became the Living
when it became supercharged with Havoc's energy.
That is, that's amazing because it's like, here's this character, like this Pharaoh who's like absorbing all this energy. Like, oh my God, what is he going to turn into? And he turns into a monolith.
What the fuck is that? And I'm just like, what's a monolith? Isn't that just like the only thing I knew a monolith? Well, yeah, isn't that a big black fucking slab of shit?
Big stone thing.
Yeah. Like
why didn't we ask Roy Thomas about the living monolith?
He's a living contradiction.
A living monolith.
Oh, that was a cool name, man. Monolith's a cool word.
That run has just about everything that a classic X-Men fan would love. You know, you've got new mutants being introduced with, you know, Alex Summers and Polaris, and then you've got Sentinels and Magneto, and they go to the Savage Land, so you've got Kazar.
That was probably, and no, I haven't read it since, but at the time reading X-Men, I hated that era.
The pre-Giant Size?
Yeah,
Boy, even the Neil Adams stuff.
Yeah, I did not. Well, I just hated those new characters, and I just did not like that era at all.
New character? You mean the old
Polaris Alex Summers and I.
Sunfire. The introduction.
I hated that shit. I just thought it was weak. I thought that was just me. I mean, I don't know, for whatever reason. I haven't gone back and read it, so I have no idea
I've got the Masterwork that they, because they really, I bought the Master, that they had, the Marvel Masterworks.
What year was it?
Those would have 68, 69?
Yeah, so I read them when they came out in the...
The classic
X-Men. Yeah, the classic X-Men reprints. I fucking hated that shit. No, that was just me. Yeah. I was.
You weren't the only one because it went into reprints. You weren't the only one that wasn't in love with the new character.
This is true.
After, and that's the thing. Maybe X fans today don't know is that in between issue 67 and 93. Those were all reprints of earlier issues. They didn't cancel it. They started reprinting old issues.
Long history of reprinting the X-Men. Yeah. I mean,
It was different back then.
Yeah.
Also, it's always funny to think about like all those years there where Magneto was just like the worst villain. Just like, oh, he's here to fight the Avengers. Like, Magneto. Like, before someone was like, let's make him a Holocaust survivor and give him some like
interesting
something
backstory
interesting. And he was the shittiest, like most generic.
He's just always yelling, "Ah,
get over here, Toad!"
Yeah, right,
Why is Toad hanging out with them? He treats you so badly.
That Roy Thomas, Neil Adams run is whenever Magneto started to become kind of interesting, because that's whenever he's like engineering the mutates in the Savage Land. One of the really funny parts is that Angel is in the Savage Land and has been hurt, and he's in Magneto's lair, but Magneto doesn't have his helmet on, and so Warren doesn't recognize him.
Oh, yeah, but Snake, you never took
who's
that
this
helmet
gray-haired old man?
Yeah. And it's not until he puts his helmet on, he's like, I am Magneto.
Was that when you had like
he was
weird henchman, like frog man? And
yeah, those are the mutates, the Savage Land.
They were doing the whole Doctor.
Island Dr. Moreau thing
with him.
There's no idea.
I fucking hated that.
There's no idea that it can't be stolen for comics.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's why I didn't like it either. I don't know. The great tradition of comics.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it is Silver Age Roy Thomas stuff. So it for the modern palette probably hasn't aged incredibly well.
He gave it a shot.
If you are a Neil Adams fan. At all, he wasn't gonna. So cool.
Have they put out a omnibus of the Extinction Agenda yet for X-Men?
I believe they have.
That's the one? That's the one where Warlock dies. I remember I read that when I was a kid. I was fucking pissed that they killed him.
You were a Doug Locke fan, weren't you?
I didn't like Doug Locke.
Yeah,
I just
you
thought
like
it was
Doug
stupid.
And Warlock.
I liked. Yeah, I mean, it's just. There's no reason.
Was Doug Ramsey your favorite?
I love Doug Ramsey. Yeah, I love New Mutants. Doug Ramsey was my favorite.
Yeah.
Because I've said many times, he had a power that in comic books sucked balls, but in real life would be totally awesome. Like, to be able to speak any language and like be awesome with computers. Like, you know, at that time,
you could make
computers
a lot of
weren't
with it.
That sweet. Yeah. So, like, it was like, oh, what are we going to have this guy do? Like, the Danger Room did things, but, like, there was a computer
read
attached to it. Yeah, like.
New Mutants was awesome. I was a huge fan of New Mutants. As
I got a bunch of the classic trade paperbacks, because over the years, I must have gotten rid of some of my.
The thin, big graphic novel ones, or
the collected editions.
Oh,
like,
I still have like the New Mutants,
the
big
graphic novel
thing. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. It was
of
awesome
all
art.
The books,
I'm trying to remember.
Of all the books I have, like those are the ones that surprisingly I can immediately makes me remember reading them when I was young.
Yeah,
like I don't know what it is about those New Mutant books, but they always
takes you right
do
back.
It.
Yeah.
They were so inept, like at doing shit. You know, like they were trying to learn. He just ran into things.
Sunspot would like break shit. Yeah. And couldn't control himself.
They
he was so
go
angry.
To the mall and they get into a fight with the Sentinel and they just wreck everything. Yeah. Like they were great.
Well, I mean, when the X-Men first started, they were teenagers, and by the time that we were reading the X-Men, they had grown up and they were doing this thing.
And then this series
comes out. And it's like, oh, well, here's the X-Men again, but they're teenagers and they're like me, and so there was
awesome costumes.
Oh, great!
They had
powers.
Sweet costume.
Do you remember
when they switched the
costumes and they're like, we're going to design our own costumes because we don't want to. Because when Magneto was in charge of us, he didn't take. And then they, like, of course, designed themselves like the
shittiest costumes ever. It's like, you had such sweet costumes. They're simple and elegant and beautiful. Why did you fuck that up, you dumb kids?
Yeah, they're like.
Because they're kids. They do that.
Know.
They wear different colored socks.
I would say the comic that. And this is. It's going to sound like a joke, but it's actually. I have a really bad memory for like my childhood, and I don't know why. I had a really good childhood, so it's not like I'm blocking anything. But for whatever reason, I don't have a really good memory for a lot of stuff in my childhood. But like one of the first comics I ever remember reading, and anytime I see it or hear the name, I sort of am instantly transported back to my childhood. It's fucking Captain Carrot and the Amazing Zoo Crew.
Oh, hell yeah.
I don't know why, but like anytime that's like one of the earliest memories of buying that in a spinner rack at 7-Eleven.
Those books are also awesome.
Awesome,
yeah, right? Like they're really cool. They're like really, really good. I wish they would have put out that showcase. I hope someday they figure out the money, like. The, like how they've had a lot of problems with those showcases because DC has, like, after a certain date, people get like that flat royalty.
Oh,
like
right,
they
right,
just
right.
get that much. Like you get the same amount no matter what, and economically it just doesn't work with the showcase.
The showcase to like, do it. There's no reason.
So they have to get good. All the creators to sign agreements to take a lesser royalty right. for yeah, it. And right. like they solicited a bunch of those states. before getting the permission, oh. and then like it didn't work out. But now they like Suicide Squad. They put out the hardcover. Color because
oh,
economically,
really?
No, not Suicide Squad.
I would read that.
The yeah, thing say. Of supervillains. The
oh, the super oh, secret society,
society of supervillains, yeah, which yeah, is yeah. supposed to be a showcase, and then like they had the problem where they because all those books had like 15 people all like,
and they're so the cheap that oh, to yeah. try and pay royalties on it, to,
like
know,
it just doesn't work out. Doesn't
I mean, you'll get like you know the Haunted Tank, and there's. You know, 80 fucking creators that worked on Haunted Tank, yeah. you know, and the damn thing cost $15.
But now they put out those hardcovers. I guess it makes more sense economically. But yeah, Captain Carrot, those are awesome.
yeah.
Those are great just, books.
I would just still, like I said, one of the first books I remember reading. I don't even know how old I was, but I remember
picking them up. Art Adams Gumby.
Art Adams Gumby was one of your favorites.
You guys remember whenever Art Adams did Gumby?
I did not read it. No,
he did a Gumby remember. Series. It was awesome.
Was it? It was good.
I know. It was great.
I was going to say, Captain Carrot, the thing I always love about the cat is that Earthsea was, as a child, a real place. Earthsea was a planet that existed in the DC universe. There was a planet
of Captain Carrot.
There was a planet of talking animals
yeah.
And
that's right.
Characters would end up going like Gorilla. There was one where Gorilla Grodd ended up on Earthsea.
Yeah,
and Captain Carrot had to. Fight
I do
Gorilla
remember
Grodd.
There would be times where characters would go to Earthsea and they would run into Captain Carrot and the zoo crew. Yeah, yeah,
that was a thing.
It was awesome. It was. Now I'm looking back, I'm like Captain Carrot was the shit, man. That's what got me into comics. I think
awesome.
I'd like to I want to look up like when that came out. Like I want to figure out how old I was.
It was the early 80s where I think it was coming up because it stopped like a year. It might have gone all the way up until Crisis when it obviously was.
I'm gonna look it up right now. You guys keep talking. I'm gonna look it up.
Think,
talk about
you know. Luckily, they had a big enough heart not to show Earthsea getting destroyed.
Yeah,
like a lot of. I don't think a lot of kids would have been like, "Oh shit!" Like
just Harbinger showing up at Earthsea and like,
yeah.
I mean, how fucking fucked up would that screw his head up? Like he shows up and there's just like bunnies and ducks talking and. He just knows they're all going to, you know, be destroyed in a
getting
few hours.
Getting wiped out.
Yeah.
Getting wiped away.
Was Earth C right next to Earth B? What was Earth
B? Earth B was Bob Haney's world.
Yes, because Bob Haney didn't give a
he
shit.
He didn't
about
give a
anything.
Shit about. He would have Wildcat and Batman in the same story, mm-hmm. like not Earth 2 Batman, just like the Batman. That. But, and not explain it, which just sent like comic book readers into like a fucking tailspin nightmare.
I so wish that okay. Bob Haney was writing comics today.
February of 1982, so I would have been 11 years old, and that's probably the first fucking comic book I ever picked up was
Captain
Carrot and his Amazing Zoo Crew.
I think Shazam ended up there once. I know there was one with Superman was on Earthsea, and I know Gorilla Grodd there was had one where he ended up on Earthsea.
Well, speaking of Shazam. Does anybody know if Taki Taney is going to be in the new series?
Well, I fucking hope so.
I would imagine. I can't
eventually.
Imagine. Yeah, I would think so. Well, he's already said the whole family's. He's like, yeah. You can't have Shazam without having the family. So
okay, it's a Freddy.
You got to have
Mary.
Gotta have
now, to what degree or what, you know.
Shazam Jr.?
I'm hoping that they don't have, like, Freddy be Captain Marvel Jr. or Shazam Jr. And I don't know. I kind of want to just be Shazam.
Just
at least for a little while. Just the one. Just Billy. Just be Shazam. I don't know. We'll see.
Captain Marvel.
The
Zucker awesome.
Return in a Countdown to Final Crisis tie-in entitled Captain Carrot and the Final Arc.
Yep. I remember that.
You're gonna track that down.
I think I actually have some still issues of Captain Carrot hidden away somewhere. You had Captain Carrot, Alley Cat Abra, Pig Iron, who was my favorite.
Pig Iron's an awesome
Rubber Duck, Yankee Poodle, Fastback, Little Cheese, American Eagle. The villains were Dr. Hoot, Acrostic, a cannibal recently organized solely to instigate crimes. Brotherhood, Cold Turkey, Jailhouse Rock, Digger O'Doom, Progzilla, Feline Faust, Gorilla Grodd, Armadillo, Kangaroo, King Cone, The Timekeeper.
Who is the creator?
Roy Thomas wrote.
Was it Roy?
Yeah.
Was,
God, I forget who that
was. Yeah, Roy and Scott Shaw.
Yeah, Scott Shaw was the artist.
Yeah.
Roy, I would not have guessed Roy Thomas.
Roy Thomas, listen, he was... he was doing All-Star Squadron at the same time as he was doing Captain Carrot.
Well, you start to understand why he just fucking hated
Crisis. Yeah. Infinity Inc.
Destroyed everything, like, it his entire career.
Everything that he was, at DC, yeah. Just destroyed.
And at that time, I would say that those books were, in hindsight, better.
Do you remember? We talked to Roy Thomas, what, probably 4 years ago, yeah. Or something, 4 or 5 years ago. Do you remember what he told us about Crisis? Because you asked him what.
I forget, but he was not.
Fuck Crisis. This is quoting it, hopefully closely. If it were a baby, I would have smothered it in his crib.
Yeah. Well, you read like Absolute, when you read the Absolute Crisis and you read all the notes and you see all the stuff. Like, much credit to the people that put it together, because they don't sugarcoat in the absolute volume, like, the notes that go with it, like, yeah. The attached, like, thing about it. Like, you can see that Roy Thomas is not, like,
he's fighting for
do we have to get rid of the JSA? Do we have to get rid of, like, and then slowly
Like you said, the dude wrote everything for, like, yeah. You know, 2 decades leading up to it, and then it's just like,
all this stuff
you're doing
did.
What?
What's all about?
Hey, Alan Moore, guess what? You don't have shit to complain about. Roy Thomas had fucking decades worth of work destroyed in front of him.
It's just like, it didn't happen. Yeah, like, these don't just, care. These characters don't. Nah, they don't
matter anymore.
They don't matter anymore.
It's comics.
Different than
you and I like weird shit.
Yeah,
it's like I've read so much stuff. I just want weird now. I don't, you know. It's like straight story.
That's
no,
the realm.
Give me that, weird.
They're
give
comics.
The
realm they're you comics. Should be weird. Have beans run around and.
When you've read a lot of comics, the realm you should live in when you've read a ton of comics is you're gonna end up liking the weird stuff just because like I've read.
You've seen everything else.
I've read like so many Justice League stories.
Right.
I have read hundreds of Justice League stories. Like I should sit down and fucking count. Like how many?
You know what you should do? You should do a podcast.
I did. Read them all.
No, but you just get bored. It's like, okay, well, I've only seen this 4 times before.
Starro again.
You know,
again.
It's like, oh, Batman is, you know, doing that again. You know, yeah, so
that's
it's just the draw,
I think, of, like, Earth 2 Superman or having a different Earth, you know? Like, it's like a place for people who have read comics for a really
weird,
long time can be like, oh, like... JSA, like yeah, that's why I'm excited for that Earth 2 book actually that James Robinson's doing with Nicholas Scott. Who knows though? I haven't loved all of James Robinson's recent stuff. So
he's the epitome of hit or miss.
We'll see what happens. It might be interesting.
We'll hope for the best.
I always have. I have
that's
a soft spot for Earth 2.
Like, you know that leads into something. Oh, if I'm sorry,
no, you go, yeah, gonna, I'm done.
I was going to say weird. That book that I'm enjoying is. Frankenstein, Age in the Shade, and
mm-hmm.
Jeff Lemire has been doing that since it started, and now he's leaving to do Dark Avengers, which I was very happy to hear.
He's doing Dark Avengers.
No, he's doing Justice League Dark, which is a book that I had big hopes for Justice League Dark.
Just didn't click for you,
and it just didn't. Even though it was Milligan, and the art was good, and it was, but it was just too like.
Felt too it felt too much like, what characters should we put together for Justice League Dark?
Like,
let's put Constantine, let's put them, and like, no, let's come
up
with
the
story.
How do we get them together? And that was the story, and it's like, it was kind of boring. It was just sort of bland, but, so I'm interested to see him do that, because I think the concept is cool. and Jeff's really great. But I was, you know, I was sad to hear that he was leaving
Frankenstein
until they announced that Matt Kent is taking over. So, and Matt, I've actually had a long conversation with him about his book,
Three Story,
and
he is so talented and like so many other creators in this industry, such a nice guy.
Just absolutely. Really great guy. Nice guy. Real smart, real talented creator. And it's interesting, though, like those two guys, like 10, 15 years ago, those dudes are never working for Marvel or DC.
No.
Either one of those guys. There's no way they're working on a Justice League book. And you know what I mean? Like, it's not happening.
I was thrilled whenever they got in, like, the Marvel Strange Tales. It's like, good for them. Yeah. And now here they are, you know.
So I think that's an awesome sign maybe of, you know, at least taking chances with creators that are doing different stuff. And once again, like, I like both of those guys. I like their work because it is different. You know what I mean? Like, they have different ideas.
Jeff's really good.
Jeff's really good.
Like, in sort of a realm where lately I've felt like a lot of superhero comics have become particularly homogenous. Mm-hmm. Like, because it goes in cycles, I think. Like, I think maybe Marvel and DC for a little too long have had the same people sort of controlling a lot of the stuff, and it always happens. It ends up.
Well, like you said, they get to be too many books about something, or they get into a groove of like, well, this is working. We're going to keep going with that theme or that style.
And it's like cool to see, you know, like when
something completely different,
someone new come in, and like Jeff's really good about like. The concept of Frankenstein is very clear. It is like a weird science horror book. And that's like the heart of it.
Monsters fighting monsters.
Yeah, and that is like the heart of it. And he puts a ton of stuff into it.
Yes.
Like, it's very, like, it's jam-packed full of stuff. And, like, his approach to Animal Man is not the same. But the concept of Animal Man is very strong. And, like, everything feeds into that concept of which he is going, and they don't feel the same. They don't feel like DC is putting out. It doesn't feel like Justice League. It doesn't feel like Aquaman. It doesn't feel like whatever else is going on. It's like
they are their own books. They're their own books. In you know, while they're part of the universe, the DC universe, they stand alone as their own things, and I think, you know,
that's cool. A good thing.
Yeah,
that is the best thing. Like, sometimes comics act like they sell more than they do, where they feel we have this readership. We need to make this work, so this tone works.
Right.
And it's like, well, you know, you guys don't sell that much to be like all the time.
You know, it's interesting. I just, going back to work, and you know, I'm in the process of redeveloping a website and working with the CEOs of our company, and just had a conversation about how, you know, they wanted this, you know, one of the CEOs was very specific about wanting a couple of different things. Because that's what our audience wants. And I you know, I was trying to explain, I was like, no, you don't even know what our audience is, because you listen to the 20 or 30 people that call you in a month,
mm-hmm.
and you think that's our audience. You don't even know what the real audience is or what the potential audience is.
And most people want to think that they are the audience.
Yeah, well, that's the other part of it is that they think that everyone thinks like they think. And so,
well, it's like a weird scale thing, because oftentimes when, you know, the topic of like homogenous tones in comics comes up, people are like, well, listen, what Bendis and Johns do works, man.
It sells comics.
And then you think, well, they don't sell that
many. They sell 60,000.
Yeah. Like,
60,000 comics?
Let's calm down about this tone works.
In any other, like, any other creative medium outside of, like, fine art painting, you know, like, 60,000 is a fucking failure.
It's like, it's
music industry, failure. Movie industry, failure. Video game industry, huge failure. You know what I mean? Like,
comics, a pattern to follow.
Yeah. Like, let's keep doing that. They're winning.
Success.
You know?
Not to say that you have to get rid of it, but it's always like, well, like a lot of times, whenever you have an argument about stuff in comics, people would be like, well, listen, what he does.
He's number one, baby.
It's like,
he's number one.
Well,
you know?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, he's the tallest midget. Like, well, how about we start looking outside of what he, you know?
It's crazy because it's an entertainment industry
down.
That if you can sell 10,000 of something, it's sustainable.
Which is cool because what that should mean is that
more stuff comes out, but more chances are taken.
Yeah.
It should mean that,
which
right?
Which is cool.
We're able to take more chances because we only have to do it.
Especially if you're owned by two companies that treat you like
of dollars
that treat you as content generators,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, like
we don't really give a shit what you sell, so
yeah,
you know,
like,
why are you so uptight about it?
You should be like making like tons of.
Let's
new
throw
shit.
As much shit at the wall and see what sticks, and try and find something that really fucking blows up. And
we're talking about Jeff and Matt in this case, but Sweet Tooth is one of my favorite books that Vertigo puts out, and I mean it is a post-apocalyptic story about a kid who's a human deer hybrid. I mean, where else besides comics are you going to see that?
The internet, YouTube, I think is about the only other
way. Yeah, you know, but like actually produced, you know.
Right, right.
You know, pick it up and,
ooh,
and hold it in.
I'll take one if there's another.
But pick it up and hold it in. Oh, but by the way, the reason I mentioned this, it just kind of fit in, is that in the latest volume of Sweet Tooth, Matt Kent actually stepped in as a guest artist for a flashback story.
I think they're the same person. I think that...
I've seen them both in the same room at the same time.
Oh, all right, well.
So, but... yeah, if you don't read Sweet Tooth, it's very good. I enjoy it.
Well, no, but that's, and we've talked about this over the years, over and over again. I'm sort of like, you know, in this day and age, it's easier than ever to get comics produced, to make your own stuff, and it's like, don't, why, you know, why do we just continue to see a lot of the same shit? You know, like, you know, fuck it, if it's going to fail spectacularly. You know what I mean? Like, make it a huge failure.
Well, you know, I think a lot of creators are fans of comics, and they want to make comics that they're fans of.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's just kind of, you know,
ingrained. Yeah, so. It's hard to get, I think it's hard, I mean.
It's another one of those things where, like, the entire system, like, distribution and everything is part of it. You know, like, that's why comics... that's why it's not easy to figure out why comics don't sell more, because like on every level there's some fucked up thing that has developed that no one knows how to stop, because it's just how it is. And like no one planned it. Like,
just got this.
It's got there, somehow, and yeah. Now we're there.
Like, it's kind of like going
works,
to the DMV,
but,
you know? Yeah. It's kind of like getting your license renewed.
It's just
we don't know how this process came, you know, about.
I think the DMV gets a bad rap.
It gets what?
A bad rap. I've been to the DMV, you know, all my life. I've never had an issue with the DMV. I never have a wait. I never have bad service. I never have problems.
I've never had terrible.
I walk into the DMV. I get into, you know, every fucking however many years it is, I get a license. I walk in. I'm out. I'm out within a half hour. Bam! I'm out. Got a new license. What's the big deal? Everybody bad mouths of DMV.
All right.
I'm a bad guy.
It's better than Diamond.
Way better than Diamond. Jesus.
Right? Yeah.
You want to rip on somebody.
Yeah. Well, hey, we got, 20-ish minutes left here.
Wait, and, we got a time limit?
Yeah.
What? Who the fuck's putting us on a time limit?
This is called me giving you a heads up as to where we are in the show.
Listen.
I am...
We'll go as long as we need to go.
I know.
We do this once
on
a month.
On and on till the break of dawn.
Absolutely.
If you have some more comic stuff to talk about, we certainly can. But I wanted I wanted to get some movie talk. Oscars are
movie.
Coming up. And
which
I know
superhero
that
movies got nominated for? Did
none?
Yeah, there's none. A reason why.
Yeah, Sal. I know that you're a big movie buff, and you've been turning me on to some of the Oscar nominated movies. What out of the Oscar field have you seen or watched?
You know, honestly, so far this year, I haven't had a chance to see that much of it. I saw the Ryan Gosling film Drive. I saw.
I keep hearing people talk about how good that movie is.
I didn't. I mean.
Yeah.
To me, it seemed like a weird experiment as of, you know, even the font of the fucking title is like a weird 80s, like a bad 80s movie. It's bizarre. It's interesting in a lot of ways because it's very subtle. It's very downplayed. It, even though it's full of, you know, sort of graphic violence and that, you know, I mean, Gosling, I think, goes an hour without saying anything in the film. Literally, without saying a fucking word. And
I think it's just like, it's like one of those things where, like, some director or somebody wanted to make something like weird, and it kind of caught on a little bit. Like, people kind of
and I could see. I mean, it, artistically, there's some interesting stuff there, and it's very pretty, and it's different. It's definitely. I mean, once again, it's like, it's one of those things. It's different, and it's cool that it was made. I wasn't crazy about it myself. You know, I think it's worth a watch, but I don't know that I would. You know.
It's not the one that you're putting in the ballot box.
Somebody to watch in the future.
In the I can't think of who the director is.
Yeah,
he made something else.
Thing, yeah, like I forget. I was hearing a lot of stuff about him when it was coming out, but I forget. But I haven't seen it yet. My wife saw it on a flight to Israel.
Your wife went to Israel?
Yeah.
No, she took her Israel trip. How was it?
Yeah, it was good.
Good.
Yeah.
She enjoyed it.
She had a great time. All right. I think she saw it in Israel actually, and she liked it. And she doesn't like super violent films, but I think she liked like the artsier sort of like look too, because it looked really pretty and it looked really, that's what she said. She's like, it just looked really
pretty, and it's interesting because it's so different than what you normally see, especially, I mean, it sets itself up as sort of like a action movie, and it's not, know, it's much more of an art house kind of film, but it's cool. I mean, it was interesting. It's just, like, I don't know if it's just my age, and sometimes I look at stuff like that film and I go, well, this is just a guy kind of like playing around with bad 80s movies, and people don't recognize it because they're too fucking young to know that, like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not, like, the font for the titles is the font we use for the Body Solid logo, our company logo.
Oh,
that
it's period?
No. The Body Solid script.
Oh my gosh.
But
okay.
It's hot pink.
Oh.
and this is our logo, the company we work for, Body Solid.
Mistral. Sorry.
Yeah. It's a logo that I designed 20 years ago and used a font, and we've still been using the fucking thing. Not 20 years ago, but...
At least 15.
15 years ago. And that's the font that they use. And so and maybe that was just right from the beginning. I'm like, why are they using that shitty font in hot pink? Like, it's a bizarre, just weird... But
maybe part of the appeal of it is like people sort of are starved for things that are different.
Like we were talking, you just want something different.
Like this is just different. It's different from other. It's not Fast and the Furious.
Right.
You know, it's not like.
And that's what people probably expected.
It's a car movie, but it's not Fast and it's like it's
kinda,
different.
Kind of like, you know, going to Big Lebowski expecting it to be a bowling
movie. Yeah, that was definitely
that was your experience.
Yeah, and it's like, what is this?
What's up?
Did you see Moneyball?
I did see Moneyball.
Really?
Twice I've watched Moneyball.
Yeah.
You're reading it right now.
I'm reading
now.
The book. Yeah I've started reading. I'm about 60% through it.
What are the other movies up for Best Picture?
The Artist.
I haven't seen that.
Which is the black and white silent film, which
I'm interested in seeing.
I'm interested.
This weekend, I think.
War Horse, the Steven Spielberg movie about a horse in war.
you know, what really... Like, no horse, like, has ever decided to join a war. Like, right? Like, the horse is just there.
It was forced in and became a hero. I don't know.
It's a very special horse.
I just want a really good World War I movie. And, am I going to have
horse.
To see fucking War Horse
yeah,
to get,
so.
Like... Actually, I read something they're making. Someone's making a World War I movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I forget who it was. But it was cool.
In
I read
the trenches.
It. Yeah, like, they were, like, going all out, like... This is how like
falls quiet on
World War. Yeah.
What else is up?
Descendants is that up for Best Picture?
I might be.
Yes, it might be.
Descendants. I saw
it.
That. I did like Descendants. Yeah. Clooney's just really good, and that's a movie. Like, see, he keeps making movies that unless it was him, they'd never get made. Like that movie is never going to get made unless George Clooney's attached to it. Right
up in the air.
Did you see Ides of March?
Yes, I did see Ides of March, and this is. Oh, I was going to mention this about Drive. I went. Up until this year, I I went into Ryan Gosling's career not wanting to like him.
Yeah.
Because he's just too fucking good looking. And I just instantly am like, ah, fuck him. You
is
know,
he going Clooney? Is he going Clooney? Yeah. It's like, he's in a lot of
But now
of
I'm like, wow, he's really fucking good. He's, you know, he's actually really good.
And he's in good, really good movies. And
yeah,
he's like,
yeah.
It's like Clooney, where like, if Clooney's in something, you're kind of like, oh, even if at first you're kind of like, I don't
I'll
know.
Watch,
I
at this point, I'll watch anything Clooney does.
I'd march is Clooney and Gosling.
Clooney and Gosling.
Okay, it's the political.
The presidential. Clooney plays presidential. He's a senator who's running a campaign for president. In
Gosling's
the early
an aide.
He's his like PR guy, basically. And it's really good. Yeah, that was a very good movie. I enjoyed that a lot. It's slow. It's not, you know, action-packed or anything, but it becomes a bit of a thriller at some point.
Conspiracy
and an
thriller,
interesting.
It's like political intrigue.
Yeah, I mean, it's It's not. Yeah, it's not conspiracy. It's people trying to
it's about
hide their shit
politics.
From other people. And
it's about
yeah.
how shitty politics.
Yeah, exactly.
Is,
yeah. It's about how even. Basically, to me, what I got was
the candidate.
No matter how good you are,
you'll be destroyed.
You will be fucking turned
into
an asshole in politics. There's just no matter how good your intentions are, no matter how, you know, and I think probably most people that get involved in politics initially are trying to do something good. It doesn't fucking matter. It's going to grind you, and the only way you survive is by being a fucking bastard.
Yeah,
that, you know what I mean?
Have like, to be a shark.
Yeah, there's just no way around it, and that's just what,
the help,
what it is.
The Help is nominated for Best Picture.
Did you see that?
I like The Help. I saw
it
last week.
It's not Best Picture.
It was,
like, listen,
I thought it was like...
what was the Blind Side? The Help is like this
like,
year's
That
the
wasn't
blind
up
side.
For Best Picture. That was
yeah,
just
was.
Up for Best Actress.
No, it was Best Picture. It was
like,
nominated for Best Picture.
It's time to... I know they thought it was a good idea to start nominating 10 movies. Like, there weren't 10 movies worth... Like,
well,
it's
there
okay.
never is. It's just, you know.
But it's like you get to the point where you're like,
I didn't. Yeah. I have not seen it. I've heard a lot of people liked it. To me, it looked like
it is supremely okay.
Yeah, it is on.
That's
par.
What I would expect. Yeah.
It is on par with Fried Green Tomatoes.
Okay,
as a movie.
Yeah, that's what I would expect from it. To me, it feels very force feeding you.
Yeah. An agenda, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
You know. So,
my favorite that I've seen so far, and we talked about it a little bit this week, Sal, as far as like pure entertainment value, smart, really well acted, visually, I loved it, was a Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
I
love that movie.
I really liked it, but I, you know, the problem I had with it was, you know, and it was the book.
I have a lot of issues with the book. Like
I do too. It's a decent enough story. It's interesting characters. The way he, you know, weaves their two stories. My biggest problem with it is, and the same thing with the film is that she's a good enough character. She doesn't need to be raped so you feel bad for her.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the problem I had with it. Is like I don't need that out of her.
There's a lot of. I have not seen the movie because I read the book for a book club, actually. And I had a lot of problems with the book. That thing, that bothers me. It bothers me that at the end of the book, this character is supposed to be super independent and, like, on her own. Like, oh, she really fell hard for this middle-aged,
right.
like do we need that?
That didn't bother me as much only because it wasn't necessarily anything about him other than he wasn't a shit. You know, like, he was a decent guy,
yeah, but
and
there's
that's
a lot
why...
of things that go into that, like, this
But it
is
all
not...
goes back to her being raped and abused by every fucking man she runs
also,
into.
Also, like, the idea of, like, in the book where, like, before the chapters begin, there's, like, here's some statistics on violence against women. Like, isn't this awful?
Once again,
now enjoy some violence against women. Yeah. Like there's a tonal problem with, like... Sort of
I agree.
Like
I agree.
Book,
yeah, and that's like I said, my biggest problem with it was that I thought the characters were interesting enough that they didn't need like she was a cool she was a perfect character at a time. You know what I mean? Like you don't see many stories with that type of character.
Yeah.
It's like with as far as like this alt, you know, gothy little girl who is you know, in she is independent and strong, but still fragile and fucked up. And she was interesting enough. She didn't need to fucking, you know, to have all that. And to me, it just felt like, well, I need you to feel sympathetic for her. So I'm going to, you know, she's going to be violently raped. She's going to, you know, she's going to get him back.
Oh, she got him back.
Yeah, absolutely. But that, once again, is just sort of like, you know.
It's not necessary. It's
it's like
there's a bunch of stuff in that book that is like because I have a lot of huge issues with the book. I feel like a lot of the stuff that you're supposed to be horrified by is undercut by the fact that violence is thrown around in that book like
casually.
Like everything, like here's rape. Here's more rape. Now this rape you're supposed to feel even worse about. Here's like this. Like you can't just throw. You can't have a book where you're supposed to feel the violation of the characters and then casually throw violence around all the time. Like it doesn't matter. Like because what happens is you as a reader you stop. They're like, oh, okay.
More rape.
Yeah, like, all right, we're going to do a section.
But, you know,
like,
I'll tell you what, in the film, the reason that writers do it is because it fucking works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, my wife and I were watching that movie, and it was late at night, and, you know, it's a long fucking
movie. It's a long movie.
It's almost two hours.
2 hours, 40 minutes or something.
It's a long fucking movie, and we were watching it, and she's sort of laying on the couch, and I'm watching it, and I'm more interested in it than she is. And then she gets raped, and all of a sudden, my wife is fucking interested. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it drew her in because she felt sympathetic for the character, and she was waiting for her to fucking get him back. And when she, you know what I mean? So it works. For me, it's just like, well, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't need it. I thought she was...
Yeah, your wife reacted, and you... were watching her reaction because you knew what the
writer
was trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, she went from like almost falling asleep watching the movie to holy shit, I'm interested now.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, this will get you interested. Like now, your interest is peaked, you know. But at the same time, when you get to the end of it, I don't think it makes it a fulfilling experience. I think it makes it a. It aspires to be something that it is not. It is not a statement about violence against women. It is a thriller that uses a lot of violence against women to make it interesting. It is not a statement on strong women.
And I certainly don't want to, you know, badmouth someone that, you know, is dead.
He won't mind.
I mean, well, no, I know, but I think that, you know, the books were decent, but I think, you know, they became extremely popular because the author Stieg Larsson ended up killing himself, and that generated an enormous amount of interest in those books, and they went on to, you know, huge sales and the films. But I bet
it looked good because David Fincher did it.
It looked great. I'll tell you what, the opening credits for it
were
bizarre and disturbing. But very cool.
Trent Reznor's
turned into quite the
producer.
The music, the movie, his soundtracks are awesome to work to. Yeah.
Well, now
they're great.
It's what like 2 years in a row now because he did Social Network.
Fincher. I think him and Fincher are a match. I mean, they're a very good match.
His films. But look
I'm sure Mara Rooney probably did a really good job.
I
like Daniel Craig a lot.
Daniel Craig was very good. I think the girl in the Swedish version was really good, actually probably better than Mara Rooney to me, because I think she wasn't as badass as kind of Mara Rooney.
It wasn't as like
Americanized. You know what I mean? Like cowboy-esque.
You get a little like, and he's not American, but a little James Bondy, like, I'm going to figure out how to do this. Like,
I thought Daniel Craig was...
No, I mean not her. I mean her character, like, occasionally, like, will do things where you're just like, really? Like, this is something like...
She was a little, it's like, okay, she's good at what she does, but
this is like we're getting into a realm that's
superpowers, yeah, you know. Like, yeah. But Daniel Craig, I thought, was really good, and I can't think of the other the
Captain Von Trapp.
I don't, who's Captain Von Trapp?
Christopher Plummer.
No. Christopher Plummer's great, but no, the brother.
oh, Martin. Who played Martin?
I can't think of that.
I can't remember his name, but he was very
Skarsgård.
Yes. Great. He was great. He's always good.
There's the. I'm sure it looks really awesome, and I'm sure the actors do because there's a ton of really great actors.
And they kept it in Sweden. I mean, they didn't move. You know, I was actually kind of.
It wasn't in like Northern California.
Well, yeah. Well, they didn't move it out. You know, it was all still in
Sweden. That would be a real stretch to get that mystery to work at like a place with more than five people every mile. You know, like. Oh, by the way,
you could see it.
It could be like a small Manchester, upstate New York,
yeah, something you know, or New Hampshire or somewhere, yeah. You know, where there are those small little, you know.
There's certain elements too that I think, like being in a foreign country, makes, certain parts.
It's hard to get Nazis in New Hampshire, though.
I don't know.
I did really enjoy it though. I mean, it was fucking long, but it's long.
Shit, man. It didn't do that well at the box office, right?
No. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, that was the thing, is that you had the main story, but then there were some other like sub stories that went. And as far as the movie, I felt like it really was about 20 minutes too long as they wrapped up Daniel Craig's story of why he ended up.
I thought the beginning was a little too drawn out. I thought, you know, we didn't need as much information in the beginning with them.
Hell, it was an hour and 20 minutes into the movie before they actually got face to face. Yeah,
before they're together. Yeah. But it was fine.
There's certainly criticisms about the story, but as far as just entertainment value, I enjoyed the shit out of it.
Yeah, no, it was very entertaining. It was very good. But probably Moneyball would probably be, as far as entertaining, probably at the top of the list for me. And I'm reading the book and loving the hell out of that. And I've become a huge fan of Mark Hattieburg.
Scott Hattieburg.
So.
I'm sure you could get a hold of him.
Is he on Twitter? Is he?
I bet he is. I bet Moneyball got him on Twitter.
He could be a guest here.
We have some new guests that just showed up for some reason. I don't know.
An audience.
Yeah, we have an audience. I don't know what...
Would you like to challenge? Would you like to propose a challenge?
Yes.
Is it a push-up challenge?
No. It is a best wig.
Best wig?
Best wig wearing? Story?
Story, yeah.
About wearing a wig?
Yes.
All right. I feel like you have us at an advantage because I feel like you probably have a wig wearing story in mind that you're bringing to this.
I don't know if I can come up with a wig wearing story.
I feel like you have a trump card ready to go.
Here, I'll give you my wig right now.
She's wearing a wig.
Oh, that's a wig.
Story. Try that on, Tom.
Do you mind if I put on your wig?
No.
But
she's wearing her too.
Why are you ladies all wearing wigs?
We're going twice.
Oh, well, that's a good enough reason. Yeah, sure, why not?
It's a normal thing to do with ice cream.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, wow, but Tom, you sort of look 70s rock.
Oh, yeah. Put the hat on.
Tom, I think you're in a cult country.
I think I'm in Rascal Flatts.
Yeah, I think so. Wow, we need to.
If there was only a visual element of
this. We need to tweet that, I think. That's lovely.
That's good.
That's kind of your natural hair color, too.
This is sort of like. Yeah,
that's very close.
I feel like this is now the best wig wearing story.
I think we have it. I think we have the best wig wearing.
You probably would. There.
You might have to wear the pimp jacket.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that would.
Yeah.
With the leopard. What are you guys doing? You're going for ice cream? And just decided to stop in the couch
and just dropped on in.
Do you notice the smell
of the wig?
No, in Margie's. It's like a old people's suit that went bad.
Well, yeah, but Margie's has been there for like 80 years.
There's probably a lot of old people.
It's kind of the...
Wow. Wow. I think you need some scarves, maybe some elevator...
Let's do this.
This is starting to get embarrassing, Tom. I don't know...
And then they came in from all over.
Where are you from? Where are you, everyone? Where's everyone?
Henry, Naperville,
this.
Yeah. That's good.
I think maybe the, you know, like sort of the fold it in. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that works a little better. There you go. Yeah.
She just got today.
All right. Well, I think we definitely have the best wig story now. This is it. For us, at least.
Did we have a better wig story?
I don't know. Is
Aloha.
Aloha.
I'll Google my way out.
Well, that was...
That was interesting.
Yeah, that was one of the more interesting visits we've had just off the street. Yeah, I don't even know. I'm not even sure how to. I don't.
Wig on.
Yeah, that was, yes, you both did. I wasn't about to cover up this beautiful head of hair.
Yeah,
not happening, ladies. Sorry.
Well, girl, dragon tattoo.
and, so there you go.
Louis, crazy ass woman is getting ice cream.
Show's done. I think right.
And yeah,
I think that's it.
I think we'll.
I think we're done.
What the hell was that?
I don't know. Idea. They saw us. Walking down the street, and
they ignored us.
They walked right in.
Walked right in, and we're like, "Do they know them? Do they? Who is
no.
them?
No idea. No."
But then we saw the picture you just tweeted. Because I'm like, "Holy shit, that was a wig!"
I thought it was important to humor them in case they were violent.
Yeah, we didn't. We weren't quite sure. They may have been escapees from a mental institution.
Or, West Wing wearing violent pants become a regular thing people wear out. In the streets.
Well, they're from Naperville, so,
yeah,
you know.
Suburbanites. All right. Well, hey, let's wrap this
I'm
one up.
I'm a suburbanite, but I don't wear pajamas out in the... You know,
hope everyone... Man.
Exactly. Trousers.
Hope everyone enjoys...
With a belt.
Enjoys the rest of their February. We will be back...
I wore that.
Almost in the springtime. Pitchers and catchers will have reported by the next time that we record.
Hopefully by then I'll have Moneyball finished.
Yeah.
And know everything there is to know about sabermetrics and baseball drafting.
You're going to be buying the Bill James handbook. I can see it. It's going to be awesome.
Baseball prospectus.
I don't think so. Yeah, that was. I enjoyed it. I'm gonna go get some ice cream with those ladies. I'm gonna see.
They wanted to. They were ready to party.
They were after you, Sal.
I have that charm for the crazy old ladies that come in off the street. They love me. I can't help it.
They were ready to party. All right, so we'll be back in March.
She did mention something about banana split to Tom, though. I don't know if that was a euphemism.
In the meantime,
it always is.
In between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around
comics,
wig party.
Weird Watchmen wigs. Rules.
Shit just got.
Oh, wait. I did want to mention one last thing about Watchmen. No,
Go!
Josh from iFanboy wrote a really good article sort of summing up his thoughts on Watchmen and why you shouldn't really go crazy about it. And it's really good, so if you get a chance, go to iFanboy.com and read it. It was good.
Absolutely. I should have mentioned
it. I meant to him, but we kept getting interrupted by crazy fucking women wearing wigs.
Exactly. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant to mention it.
There you go.
I like that picture. I do like that
picture. She looks like a 70s. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
You better put that out on Facebook. That's fucking awesome. You wonder what's in store. Break the walls across the door. To sleep, I say I love you. What the heck? I'm a train wreck. I'm a train wreck. And if you don't know